and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true.
Dateline, Sierra Vista. On Wednesday, December 25th, near North Carmichael and East Theater Drive, two pit bulls left their yard and attacked a man walking a German Shepherd. The dogs then went after a passerby who had stopped to help. The passerby drew a rifle from his vehicle and fired one shot at one of the attacking dogs, killing him instantly. Sierra Vista police officers found the deceased pit bull when they arrived. Police say it was determined by witnesses and video surveillance that the two pit bulls had left their yard and attacked the man and a German Shepherd. The man who fired the shot was later contacted, and his story confirmed the information from the earlier investigation. He was not criminally charged.
Hello, Colonel Dunn.
The second pit bull is now in quarantine, and the adult female owner of the two pit bulls, possession of aggressive dogs, under Arizona revised statutes. The victim who was attacked left the area before officers arrived, and his identity is still unknown, as is the German Shepherd. This has been the DGU, or Defensive Gun Use Files.
The story you have just heard was true.
America Armed and Free is a paid program on KVOI, wholly owned by Charles Heller, produced, engineered, paid for, and hosted by him. Any opinions are his, not necessarily the station's.
I, Harry S. Truman, President of the United States, dedicate this day of Sunday to America Armed and Free.
The Constitution does not say that government shall decree the right to keep and bear arms. The Constitution says the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
I am a minute man. I am the guardian of America, armed and free. For we knew it will always be the citizen who is the guardian of America, armed and free.
Welcome to America Armed and Free, a program dedicated to preserving your God-granted, constitutionally guaranteed individual right to keep and bear arms in defense of self or state, understanding that the citizens are the militia. This program is produced by Charles Heller and is not endorsed by anyone who isn't pro-choice on freedom.
We are the guardians of America, armed and free.
Indeed, we are the guardians of America, armed and free, both in uniform, as I have not been, and very much as my guest has been. We are having a return of Colonel William Dunn in the United States Marine Corps, retired as an 06, a bird colonel in the Marine Corps, and he was an attack helicopter pilot, and he was a squadron leader, and later on a Marine MEU, the CEO of a CO of an MEU Marine unit, and his book is Gunfighters Rule, and Gunfighters was the name of the attack group in the helmet, in the Cobra attack gunships. Boy, I'm falling all over myself today, Colonel Dunn.
No problem.
And
how you doing?
Beautiful, and I finished your book really, really well done. Bravo, sir.
Well, thank you, sir. I tell you what, it was a great release, if you will, for me to write that book and get a lot. You know, you probably noticed there's a bit of emotion in that book, so it was good to get all that off my chest, off my mind, I guess.
Yeah, I also noticed there were a whole bunch of likely names in there and a lot of call signs, not names, when you wanted to say something about somebody, which I thought was pretty classy of not calling out this particular guy or that particular guy was an Adam Henry, but some things that happened and you only used their call sign. So people in the Corps would know who you're talking about, but the civilians out here probably wouldn't, and that's just fine.
Yeah, and what I did, to be fair, is for almost everybody, I changed their call sign because, you know, this is a book about my memories. I'm not trying to throw stones at anybody else, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. Those individuals did some things I don't agree with, and very much shaped my thinking for the rest of my career in the Marine Corps, seeing some negative things, you know.
I thought it was kind of interesting, sort of one of the comments going out the door on the way over over your shoulders, that you retired as a colonel because it was determined that you might not be the type of person to be a general because you were too much against the system.
Yeah, you know, that's, I don't have 1% of any animosity or ill will for my corps.
Right.
You know, it was not one of my goals to be a general officer. I would have loved to stay in and take on follow on leadership responsibilities, but it wasn't my goal. My goal was to be a gun squadron commander and then to be a MEU commander. I attained both those goals and in between I got to be a Marine Aircraft Group commander, which was very much a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
So, in my mind, I did everything I wanted to do in the Marine Corps. I would have still loved to stay in, but what we're doing with my company, we still support the Marine Corps every day. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful thing to support my brothers and sisters that are still on active duty.
Explain to us what you've done since retiring from the Marine Corps.
So, you know, I didn't follow everyone's advice. Everyone said you do 33 years in the Marine Corps, you retire, take 6 months, take a year off, and do absolutely nothing, right? Kind of recharge your batteries.
Yeah.
So I did my retirement ceremony on June 30th of 2016. And on July 1st, which is also my birthday, I opened my company, Strategic Resilience Group, and started. We had already opened it up. What we did is we actually turned it on, so to speak, right after I retired. And then we went fully operational a month later. And what we do is a various amount of things, but our primary line of operations is information warfare. So we're supporting DOD, both in the U.S. and outside the U.S., providing data, information, and what we call now MISA, which used to be known as psychological operations, supporting our brothers and sisters that are in uniform all over the world.
Mm-hmm. When you leave the Corps, is there like this thing that you take off that feels like you're not at home anymore? I mean, or were you able to walk away from it and go, because I'm doing something related to it, I feel like I'm still part of the team?
Well, that's a great question. So when I retired, we opened the company. At the time, we were going to be a training company.
Mm-hmm.
It was me and two other retired Marines. And so I went to my wife, Mimi, one day, and I said, you know, it's interesting. I said, for the last 33 years, and I don't mean this in any macho or pejorative sense, but I go, in the last 33 years, I've thought about killing people every day.
Right.
How can I be the best Cobra pilot? How can I be the best commander? How can I train my Marines to kill every day? And so I made a comment to her. I said, now that I'm retired, I don't do that anymore. And she's like, wow, that's interesting, you know. And then our first customer was a company known as Israeli Military Industries.
IMI.
And they, IMI. And they provide weapons. And they asked us to support weapons and systems into the Marine Corps. And so I come home, like, within a week of retiring, I go, I'm back in. I'm thinking about killing people every day.
By the way, did they at least give you a Tavor?
They gave me nothing.
Did you buy a Tavor? I mean,
no, I don't have one. No,
really? They're awfully cool rifles.
Yeah, I do a tremendous amount of hunting. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be hunting as soon as I get off this call.
Oh, okay.
So
listen, if something walks by interesting that it's legal to shoot, feel free. We don't mind gunfire on the air.
Oh, yeah. If I'm at my farm, if I see a deer walk by, I'll put it on pause and I'll go whack it out for sure.
You don't have to put it on pause. You can fire the shot on the air. It's all right with me. Back in the old days with the previous ownership, I used to have a sand barrel in the studio. It would occasionally let off a round into the sand on the air.
Well, you know, it's interesting. And if I may, I was out in Pittsburgh a few months back.
Uh-huh.
And I went to Pittsburgh because the Steelers, which is my wife's favorite team, was out of town. So we and some friends from Pittsburgh, my wife grew up in Pittsburgh for part of her life.
Uh-huh.
So we go to Pittsburgh, we're hanging out to watch a Steelers game at a bar, and in our hotel, some guys show up. some, you know, they're about my age. And so I just said, hey, how you guys doing? And I go, what are you guys doing here? And they go, well, we're here to get Kamala Harris over the top. And I said to my, I said, really? I said, why? He goes, well, because, you know, he had a bunch of negative things about our future president here in a short 21 days. And so I said, well, you know, and he goes, why do you like Trump? And I said, well, number one, the right to bear arms. And he rolls in, how he goes, well, nobody needs an AR-15. And I said to him, I said, you know, brother, that's not the point. It has nothing to do with need.
Right.
Nothing to do with need. You know, I don't need a truck and a car. Maybe I could just have a car. But, you know, in America, we have a right to choose. And then I even told him, I said, you know, I hunt with an AR. And he goes, well, no one needs to hunt with an AR. You could buy a different rifle. And I said, once again, you are missing the point.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with a need, right?
Right.
You feel you need a weapon, that's okay. You may need one for personal security. That's great. No problem. But if you want a weapon, you can have one just because you're an American. And that is your right under the Second Amendment to the Constitution. You don't have to have a need. And that is what we have to make sure from, you know, from this election on forward, that those requirements are never put on us, that you have to have a requirement to have a weapon.
Right. That's exactly what got knocked down in Bruin, in the Bruin versus New York State Rifle and Pistol Association.
Right.
Is that, and by the way, if you want, need is the Marxist model. From each according to his means to each according to his needs. That's Marxist right. model.
Need has nothing to do with it.
Yeah. We're Americans. We don't take the counsel of our needs. We take the counsel of our dreams.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the right to pursue happiness. And you may be happy with 35 AR-15s. You know, I don't need 35 AR-15s. But if you want 35 AR-15, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you're not a felon breaking the law and using those weapons to hurt people, you can. I don't care how many you have.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter to me how, you know, I have some friends that have so many weapons that, you know, I'm like, I don't know how you can afford so many weapons, right? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They want those weapons because they want those weapons, and God bless them.
Yeah. You know, it strikes me that people who collect guns like a fetish, that they got to have this many of this or this kind of that, kind of ignore the most important part, and it's not the gun, it's the amount of ammo you have.
That's right.
You know, as there's a great song from First Lieutenant Joe Smith, who's both a serving lieutenant in the United States Navy and a country singer, and she's got this great song called Ammunition, and the tagline is, a gun is just a toy without the ammunition. So anyway, back to what we were talking about. I do want to get to Mr. Trump later and the current administration about when it comes to vis-a-vis drones. But I want to concentrate in the first part of this more about your book. We've only got 2 minutes to the break, but explain briefly, how are helicopter squadrons in the Marines organized?
Well, there's many different kinds, but in a Cobra Huey squadron, it's an HMLA, helicopter marine light attack, you'll have 18 Cobras and 9 Hueys. That's what it was back then. I believe they've changed it now to 12 Hueys because we have the Yankee.
Are they still using a Huey?
Oh, absolutely.
Huh.
Absolutely. It's a we used to have Novembers, and now it's a Yankee.
Uh-huh.
UH-1 Yankee. Very capable bird. I've flown them. I've got probably a couple hundred hours in them. Amazing platform.
Hmm.
And I tell you what, you can take it to the enemy in those birds.
Hmm.
And so those are great assets, great aircraft to have. And it was interesting because the Huey November at the time was the most underpowered airplane we had in the Marine Corps inventory. And our general, General Mike Howe, and I'm sure he wouldn't mind me saying this, he said one day we're up at the Pentagon, and he said, you know what? This is my biggest risk. I want these planes fixed first. So he transitioned the Hueys into Yankees before the Cobras went to Zulus, and that was the right call. And I guarantee you that saved a lot of lives.
Because it was more powerful?
It was more powerful, and it has four blades, but the Huey, when we were operating in Iraq, and I was not in Afghanistan, but Iraq and Afghanistan, those aircraft had a hard time operating because of the high altitude and high temperatures.
Yeah, because it still had two blades at the time?
Well, it had two blades. It had older engines. It just an older transmission. So everything was old, and it was designed for, 30 years prior, basically. Those, right. those aircraft were extremely, extremely old. The Yankee came aboard, and that aircraft could carry full complement of weapons. It had a bigger transmission, bigger engines, more power, and it became a very safer airplane to fly.
Hopefully they didn't buy them from Turkey where they got the ones from the transmissions for the Ford Transit XLT.
No, these are Bell helicopter texture on, baby.
Right, okay. Stand by, Colonel Dunn. We'll be back with you in a little bit.
This is Herman Cain, and if it has a muzzle, a nozzle, or a blade, you'll find your topic on America Armed and Free. Sundays, right after Liberty Watch.
Swap Shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
Don Wells, is there anything you missed on the island?
Oh, well, actually, what I really missed, there we were with nothing to do. What I missed most was the Swap Shop. I mean, what fun we'd have had. I don't know how we'd have gotten a hold of you, but we'd have tried.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
I'm Oliver North, and like you, I'm listening on America Armed and Free with Charles Heller. Civilian disarmament is an essential precedent for every dictator who engages in mass murder.
Hi, Mark Levin here. America Armed and Free. Sounds like a good title for a book. Congratulations on 20 years on KVOI, Charles.
And I got 30 rounds of judges in my magazine. I back it up when I'm 18. Then I stand on an Apache, something like you ain't seen. I'm the one who ends up to be the brain.
I don't know. He talked about Apaches, but not about Cobras in that song. Well, welcome back, Colonel Dunn. Folks, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to America Armed and Free, AM 1030 KVOI, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice, with Colonel William Dunn. His book is called Gunfighter's Rule. It's a very interesting personal story book, and also a lot about the way the Marines are organized, especially the helicopter units that he served in, the attack helicopters and the composition and Marine expeditionary units. It's a good combination explanation and personal recount without any vitriol or venom about stuff. He did tell it like it is, but he didn't call anybody out, and including the one that was taken out of the military for moral reasons. He didn't even use his real name on that. And that guy you never heard from again, I hope.
No, I did not. And I tell you what, to this day, when if I tell that story, my wife will tear up and cry.
Yeah.
Because for the listeners out there, there was an individual who was doing some terrible stuff on the internet with child porn, and some other guys covered it up. And we don't know why, we don't know who, but when I found out it, I put the shitbird in jail. I guess
easy.
I probably can't say that. I put the individual in jail. And, he deserved it. The Marine Corps prosecuted him, and he went away for, I think, 5 years.
That's
I never
not
saw
enough.
Him, heard from him again, and hopefully I never will.
Yep, that's good. I got it. You said fairly early on in the book, you said, quote, "There are a few things purer in this world than a Marine second lieutenant," unquote. Could you explain that remark?
Well, all Marine officers, when you get commissioned, you go to either one of the academies, and then you go to officer candidate school. And then once you get your degree, either before or after officer candidate school, you get commissioned.
Mm-hmm.
And you become a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps. Men, women, doesn't matter where you grew up, whether it's New York City, California, every Marine second lieutenant goes through the same basic process. And then we all go to Quantico, Virginia, to what's known as TBS, also known as the basic school, where every Marine officer, whether you're going to be a pilot, a logistician, a computer, a cyber, it doesn't matter. Every Marine, man, woman, learn how to be infantry officers and learn how to lead a platoon, because our adage is every Marine is a rifleman.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get, and I was an instructor at Quantico as a captain, and you get these young, motivated men and women who volunteered to join the Marine Corps when the country is at war.
Mm-hmm.
And that's especially, to me, that's especially amazing. And even though we're not in any declared wars right now, there are still Marines across the globe in harm's way, men and women doing all myriad of things, as well as our brothers and sisters in the Army and the other services. We have men and women downrange right now.
Yep.
And these second lieutenants, they come in, and it's just a wonderful thing. First of all, they're physically fit. You know, they can run. Many of them can run forever. Mm-hmm. They can just run. They're strong. They're dedicated. They're smart. And they're serving our country for – and, you know, I'm not naive to believe there's some individuals that come in the military with ulterior motives, right? But I would say 99% of them are here for one reason only, and that's to serve their country and to protect America and protect our values.
Certainly not for the money.
To me is the – not, oh, it's definitely not for the money. And that, to me, is pure. Uh-huh. And there is nothing more pure in my mind, nothing purer than a Marine second lieutenant. And I'm not taking anything away from the other services, right? Because hopefully they feel the same about their second lieutenants. But I'll tell you what, I will put the Marine second lieutenant up against any, you know, ensign or second lieutenant in the world. And, you know, I'm a Marine, so I'm biased.
Yeah, well, of course you are. I hope so. How do leaders stamp their mark in your book of life? I'm thinking of people like Burley.
Oh, man. I'll bring a tear to my eye.
Uh-huh. How do they go about doing that?
So Burley, which is his real call sign.
Right.
Burley was a captain when I was a lieutenant. Uh-huh. And I check in, and this individual was just smart. And I met him early on, and then I come back in the squadron, and we're both majors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had known him for a long, long time. He was one of the most dedicated officers I ever met. He was, you know, you always want to believe that every Marine officer is full of integrity, and 99% of them are. But Burley was just beyond that. Uh-huh. And he was so calm. He was a Huey pilot. He had this calm demeanor. And I just remember when he was in, you know, he was in charge of one of our detachments. He was our debt OIC, so he was the senior captain.
Mm-hmm.
And he just took care of everybody. And he was just, he would plan and plan and plan. And one thing I talk about in the book, you know, you have to be precise when you're a Marine officer,
mm-hmm.
especially when you are using weapons of war to go fight people. You can't be off by one digit on a grid. One digit on a grid, you're killing Marines.
Yeah.
You know, one digit on a grid, you're killing friendly, so or civilians. So Burley taught me this preciseness in everything. And so when we would have a flight schedule, and you would think, yeah, you know, if you're off by something, a comm on the flight schedule, who cares, right? Well, no, everybody cares. And Burley would pull out a ruler and read not just every word, every letter on a flight schedule. And I remember when I first saw him doing that, I thought it was a little silly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, ah, it's not that bad. Well, I realize over time, everything's got to be precise.
Do you still carry a ruler?
I do, and I tell you what, even it was funny because I'm so used to it, I would pull that ruler out, and my Marines would look at me like, what are you doing, sir? I said, hey, you got to read every word.
Yeah.
Every word and every letter, because words and letters mean things when you're sending messages and orders and directing people into combat. They mean things. And so it was funny because I still use it this day in my company. I'll pull out, if we're doing a proposal, I'll pull out the ruler, and I still use it.
Yeah, to read the lines.
To read the lines.
Yeah.
I can't tell you the number of times where I've taken what's considered a perfect document and find five or six things wrong with them,
mm-hmm.
just with a ruler.
Yep.
So Burley put an indelible mark, I would tell you, not just on me, and some of my peers that have read the book call me up as soon as they get to Burley.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, Burley was the man. Burley was, you know, every man and woman that I know that knew Burley, that's read this book,
yep,
has called me up and said, Burley was the man.
Yep.
So my hat goes out to Burley.
How do you go about getting people in command above you to do the right thing?
Well, I did it a very specific way.
Yeah.
Very specific. I was very direct and upfront. And period. I had a commander that when we were in Kosovo didn't want to help out a grunt because he hated the infantry battalion commander. And I pulled him aside and I said, sir, what are you doing? And he's like, I hate that, you know, son of a gun.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, today's not the day, sir. We're going into combat. Today's not the day to show this colonel that you don't like him. And so what I did is, and I'm very confident I had this reputation in the Marine Corps, is I was very direct, very honest, and very to the point. And I would tell people like it is. And people do not like to hear like it is.
No, they don't. Believe me, that's true in corporate America. Well, you already know. You have a company. But I mean, outside, sometimes I end up being the moral conscience of this place. Occasionally. It's very rare. But they get mad as hell at me when I point stuff out, but it's not the right thing to do. In fact,
yeah,
I had one senior person at this company once a long, long time ago say, why do you have to be such a expletive deleted Boy Scout? And I said, you know, that's a really good question. Thank you for asking. And I took out my Scout Oath card and put it on the desk and said, this is why.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to pull the card.
Well, I always think of it this way, is that, and I would tell my Marines this, men and women, moms and dads, that have never met us before.
Uh-huh.
They've never met Bill Dunn. They've never met me. They've never met any of my officers. Yet they trust us to keep their sons and daughters safe. They trust them to fly in the back of our helicopters. They trust us to be accurate with our firepower, mm-hmm, when they're in a troops in contact mission.
Mm-hmm.
They trust that they've never met us. Those same parents would not let their son or daughter get in a car with a stranger and drive, you know, 30 miles down to the city. They would never let them do that.
Mm-hmm.
But yet they trust us, and I make sure I honor that obligation, and I make sure that I understand that obligation, and I've always wanted every one of my Marines and sailors and anyone that's ever worked for me to understand that obligation, it's a real obligation, and we owe it to them.
Yeah, well, you do.
We owe it to them to know our procedures, our yep, emergency procedures.
All right, stand by, Colonel Dunn. We're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take that break right now, and then we'll be right back on the other side with Colonel William Dunn of Gunfighters Rule. It's an excellent book. I read every word of it, finished it yesterday afternoon, and it's worth a read. And we'll be back after this.
Welcome to Monoral Radio, where we sing in black and white.
At ease, Colonel Dunn.
I love it.
Yeah, well, you know, the music's supposed to match the interview. Hey, we got a caller that wants to ask you something, and Christopher, go ahead with Colonel William Dunn of the book Gunfighter's Rule.
Colonel, it's an honor to speak with you. I had a suggestion too. I would like to suggest a movie to you, Colonel, that you might not have seen. It's from the 70s, and it's called Birds of Prey, starring
yeah,
David Janssen. Yeah, where they fight with helicopters.
And Vic Morrow. And Vic Morrow.
Yes. And Charles, I sent you a link to Liberty Watch, just in case. And then I also had a question for you, sir.
Sure.
And my question was, you obviously have been following the current situation with the drones, I would assume, but do you ever research automated warfare and what's the future of warfare. It's that you come from the operator end of the military, and we're going into the automated end of warfare, I feel, into the future. And I was just wondering, do you ever just think about it, or what? Just your opinions. I think it would make a great topic for a show. And
it
to
would.
Get your perspective as someone who served in the military when it was still more human-oriented. And it just fascinates me how automated everything's becoming. But we depend on you guys for literally our freedom. So it's just a little more important than, say, a dishwasher or, you know, a Ring doorbell. And I'll take your...
Yeah. Hey, wait a minute. Wait, wait just a minute, Christopher. Dishwasher lives matter. Okay. Yeah. Okay, Christopher.
Oh, Charles.
Appreciate it. Take your answer
Thank
on the air.
You.
Go ahead.
Yes.
I can stay serious, but only for short bursts, Colonel Dunn. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, hey, thank you, sir, for that question, Christopher. And absolutely, absolutely. So one of the things that's very important, we study this and we work with this right now, is when you have automated systems. And what I am always pushing for is I want to keep a man in the loop or a Marine in the loop. And some people disagree with that because the human decision time frame takes longer. It's the kill chain, right? So what everybody wants to do in warfare is speed up the kill chain, and that's exactly what it sounds, is the chain of events that it takes to kill your enemy. So I want to speed it up. But the problem is the potential for an error, especially with our weapons these days, is catastrophic. So if I go fully automated, and at some point, even with automation, you have to have input. You have to have a data input from somewhere, whether the system is just absorbing this data from the environment or if it's being input by a human, at some point the data gets into this automated system. Now, think of, and I know a company, we work with a company that has the ability to send a quadcopter up. You program it, and then you let it go, and it can fly over in 10, 15 different locations, land, drop off ammo, land, pick up, you know, a wounded individual, fly them somewhere, and it can just do this all on its own. However, the speed of combat today, how do you know if you program a target in, and while that system is going, that before it gets there to execute, which could be minutes, could be hours, some of these loiter munitions could be up in the air for hours. How do you know the situation on the ground hasn't changed and maybe the automated system does not get the data and then engage their own target? So I'm all for automation. I just want to keep a Marine in the loop. So that last second, that Marine in the loop can stop or say yes. Now, a great example that just happened. We just shot down a Navy F-18 in the Red
Sea. Oh, yeah.
Okay. How did that happen? So I've had a couple discussions on this. That was not an accident. And what I mean by that is the accident wasn't shooting down the F-18.
No, it was recognition.
It was recognition.
Right.
Someone, something categorized that F-18 for whatever reason as a threat. And then it was shot down on purpose.
Right.
And then apparently the same ship almost shot down another one.
Right. Yeah, so, the Ticonderoga class. It's the USS Gettysburg.
The Gettysburg. That's right. Exactly right.
Right.
Now, I do not blame them, and this is why. And, you know, people will argue with this. What I don't know is what the pilot was doing. We have a thing called a transponder. If you don't
IFF.
Have a transponder,
right.
IFF.
Yeah.
If you don't have the IFF set properly, you're going to get shot down, period, especially in that environment.
Right.
Now, I don't know if that's the case. The investigation will figure that out. But when you are in a battle and the risk to the ship is greater than the risk to the air crew. And what I mean by that, there's 100, maybe 100 sailors in the ship that's supporting many other ships. If that ship gets hit by a drone, then it's no longer capable of defending the other ships in the Navy system there. Then what can happen? So even though it's catastrophic, thankfully the pilots came out, you know, with minor injuries. Mm-hmm. They were lucky they lived. But that's the fog of war. Now imagine if this was fully automated and all of a sudden that ship starts attacking U.S. aircraft for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really looking to see the we may never see the forensics, but what I'm wondering is if the ship was set to auto, shoots down the first jet, and then it went to manual with a human in the loop, and the second jet was stopped. I don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping they'll tell us, but I suspect that we're going to find out that somewhere in that kill chain was disturbed after the shoot down of the first F-18.
Mm-hmm.
And when they disturbed it, I wonder if they put the human in the loop.
Well,
so I hope that answers your question, Christopher, but that's my thought.
At the point they engaged the F-18 was the worst time in the world for evasion. He was on final.
Yeah.
And there ain't much you can do down at 100 and whatever, 170, 170 knots with everything down but the pilot's pants on, and you know, the tail hook extended and all that. I don't know how fast he could clean that up and get out of there, but not fast enough to get out of the way of an incoming heat seeker. I mean, that's
there's no way. Yeah.
There was no way. They did the right thing. I mean, they went for the silk ladder, but look at the bright side. Both of the guys are going to get a Martin Baker tie.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? They're going to go home and they'll probably have new call signs.
Yeah. Splash 1 and Splash 2.
Exactly. Splash.
Splash.
They'll probably both be Splash. Thank God they lived. I do thank God they lived because now we can do the forensics and find out what really happened.
Yeah, and look at the bright side. You know, what's good for General Dynamics is good for the country. And they'll build another one. They just got a contract to build a bunch more. I think another 100 aircraft. No, maybe less than that. It's a big contract. It's a $12 billion contract to build a bunch more fighters. So,
yeah, absolutely. And we need them.
We do. We also need to. I wonder what the possibilities are using unmanned aircraft and then have them managed from the air by the manned fighter. And let the unmanned craft go forward, but the manned craft supervise them. Same thing true with submarines with unmanned underwater vehicles. Wouldn't it be so much better to send out an underwater drone 5, 6, 7 miles ahead of a Los Angeles or a Virginia and manage the battle space from there?
Well, yeah, but I would do you one better. What I would do is I'll be careful how I say this. I would love to integrate unmanned and manned aircraft together, send them out where you confuse the threat. They don't know which is which.
Right.
They don't know which is unmanned and which is manned. And maybe those unmanned are decoys, and maybe they don't even have a bomb.
Well, that's the theory with MIRVs. You don't know which one of them has the warhead, so it makes it very difficult to do missile defense. Caller on line 2, your first name, please.
Rick.
Rick, you're on the air with Colonel Dunn. Kind of quick, we're down to 2 minutes before the break. Go ahead.
Okay, Colonel, if you could speak to the weapons capability of one of the gunships as opposed to, say, a ground attack aircraft in World War II, like a P-47 Thunderbolt, or maybe something in Vietnam like the Sky Raider.
Yeah, the Sandy.
A1 Sky Raider.
The Sandy.
And
I also have a
personal experience with a gunship, but I can tell it another time or I can hold on.
Well, hold on after the break. Colonel Dunn?
Okay, sure. So what a Cobra's carrying and what a Cobra carried into battle when I was there was 2.75-inch rockets. We also had Zuni rockets, but we didn't usually use those. Those 2.7-inch rockets now are laser-guided. When I was in Iraq, we just were getting the what's called the Advanced Precision Kill Weapon System, APKWS. I didn't have that on my aircraft, so I had to aim in with a little reticle in my HUD, push a button, basically, and rockets go downrange killing the bad guys. So now those rockets, you can hit a bicycle, a person, a direct threat. They're very, very accurate. So now I can carry 19 in one pod. So that gives me a lot of weapons capability. We also carry a Hellfire. Hellfire missile, there's multiple different kinds, but the basic kind goes right through a tank and sucks the people out the bottom and kills them dead, or it'll at least get a mobility kill on the tank if you don't hit right in the perfect spot. And then you can also, and I fired one of these in Iraq, a thermobaric Hellfire.
That's what I wanted to ask you about.
Yeah, so we had a big mission one day, which turned into 8.5 hours of combat flying. We talk about it a lot in the book. And I bring in these 46s to pick up some.
That's a helicopter.
And one Marine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a CH-46. Carries up to 12 combat loaded Marines, depending on the temperature. So they came in to pick up these Marines. They come under heavy fire, and it was a machine gun fire from a house. And then we watched two insurgents run into this house. And without even thinking, I put a thermobaric hellfire in the house, and it just imploded the house.
Explain so, what a thermobaric hellfire is.
So basically, it's going to suck all the air out of everything. That's the best way to describe it. And when it sucks it out, it implodes it. So there's no, like, when there's a warhead on it, but it doesn't blow up like a bomb like you're used to seeing. And so you could shoot this into a... they're great for shooting in the tunnel systems or shooting in the caves. You just shoot them in, it just implodes, and it's going to kill everybody that's within, you know, a very large distance from this weapon in the actual distance classified. So when I shot this into this house, there was no big explosion. The roof just collapsed. I mean, literally, imagine a concrete stone house, and it just flattens like a pancake. And then the call from the 46 guys were like, all machine gun fire ended when the hellfire hit.
Conflict resolved.
Conflict resolved.
All right, we're up at our last break. And, Rick, I'll let you have one fast follow-up question on the other side of the break.
Swap Shop trains are coming.
Did you just hear that?
Rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
This is Caroline.
Happy chickens.
We have a 5-acre horse property for sale.
They're participating in the program.
Please make that part of the package.
A ranch with chickens. They might call that the chicken ranch.
I've been called worse.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch. Imagine that this is your daughter.
What do you want?
Now you get to decide how this scene ends. Or...
Stop, Earl! Stop! Stop!
Some misinformed people want to take away your daughter's choice between rape and self-defense. We're pro-choice on self-defense. Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership, jpfo.org.
Welcome to the last segment of America Armed and Free. I know you know what that was.
Yep, it was. Nice, I love it.
I just thought I'd give you the feeling for a little bit. Okay, we still have Christopher. Chris, did you want to ask one follow-up question?
I just wanted, if possible, to relate something that the sort of the pucker factor that the enemy must have felt.
Really quick.
Overseas. I was in Afghanistan training Afghan forces, the Afghan National Police, and we had a range day, so we piled them into two white beat-up old Toyota pickup trucks, and they were in the back with all their weapons, and we're driving on a dirt road to the range. Nearby was the Kandak, which is the local headquarters. This is in a place called Gardez, near Gardez City, and so the headquarters is there, and there were VIPs there, U.S. VIPs, Afghan VIPs making a visit. So they had a couple of gunships in the air. And as I'm driving this pickup truck, and I'm just dressed. I had a beard, a big beard, and just civilian clothes, and actually tried to look like an Afghan because we would drive soft-skinned vehicles around through to go up to Kabul. And so I look up. All of a sudden, my partner, we hear a noise, and we look out the window, and there's a few hundred feet above us, there's a helicopter. And we're looking at a 20-millimeter gun that's pointing. And as we're driving and as the helicopter's moving, the gun stays stationary on us. And I'm thinking, and now we're not in Afghan-marked vehicles. So the Afghan National Police is a dark green, and it has markings on it and a light bar. And we're just driving these white pickup trucks, just like what the Taliban would drive. And I'm thinking, I hope that they realize that we're not the Taliban, that these guys are in, that we're in for, we're just going to the range to do some shooting. And luckily, that was the case. But when you look up and you see that 20-millimeter gun, chain gun, I guess, staring down at you, and it, as you're driving and the helicopter's moving, the gun just stays stationary pointed at you. And you realize you don't want to be in the direction of that gun at any point.
Okay. Colonel Dunn, why don't you respond to that, and Chris, take your answer on the air, okay?
Yeah, and I appreciate that. It's funny. When you said white truck, it literally brought me back to Iraq. And I can't tell you the number of white – some of them we blew up, but white trucks were a very known target. We called them bongo trucks, but they would use those for everything from putting snipers in the back, carrying homemade explosives, carrying IEDs. So the white truck was a very prevalent thing in Iraq. I'm sure they were in Afghanistan as well. And that's what they drove around. And when you said that, I literally, in my mind, I was thinking, that's a target.
You're looking through the HUD at that point.
Looking through the HUD and say, I'm like, okay, there's another guy.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Another man gone. Okay. And let's see. We're going to go next there. Mark, you got real quick.
All right.
Mark, hold on. I need to put you on the other line. And let's do that. And you're on the other line. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead,
Hi. Okay. Yeah, my son is a Marine Scout, a Marine Sergeant Scout Sniper Razorback, and during the Abbeygate incident, I told him it's time to get out of the Marines because that idiot in the White House is going to get a whole lot of Marines killed. And anyway, so he got out and he went on to doing something, working for somebody kind of like you. And I can't say any more about that. But so there's been some training accidents, one in particular at the coast of Camp Pendleton in a amphibious vehicle that I think was inappropriate. They should not have had those trainees in that vehicle that had problems. And it filled with water, sank, and a lot of them died in that incident. What is your take on such a thing like that?
Take your answer on the air. We're at the limit.
Yeah. I know that story very well. I know one of the investigators of that story. That accident should have never happened. What was happening is there was too many things going on that day. They shouldn't have. They were at the Marine Expedition Unit was at a beginning point of their training. They should not have been doing some high speed stuff, and they were. That new commander was relieved, but the reality is they should not have been doing those. You know, every new commander does things a little bit differently, but I'm going to tell you my personal opinion. They were doing too many things at once. Those Marines should not have drowned. They should have been able to recover that vehicle, but they were doing flight ops at the same time, and they could not recover that vehicle fast enough, and those Marines perished. And I tell you what, you know, what we do is risky, but what we have to do as leaders is wherever possible minimize that risk because everything we do is dangerous. So you can't accept additional risk, and that MU commander did, and
And people died because of it. All right, I want to get to the last thing, not to make any light of what of Mark's question,
sure.
But I want to get to the last thing, and that is the drones. Because originally, when we scheduled you, I got another pitch about the drones, and I want to talk about that. What do you think those are?
Well, I think they're drones. Okay, and I think they're U.S. drones. Right?
Oh, okay.
Here's the thing about this, right? There's one of three things of these drones. They're either U.S. drones flying a specific purpose, which that's what I believe they are, and they need to tell us what they're doing. Two, they're also civilian drones that because they're flying all these other drones, people feel they can, you know, put their drone up to see what's happening. Or three, they're, you know, state actor drones, right? Somebody else doing bad. Now, here's what I believe. I can carry a drone across the southern border because it's open in my backpack, marry up with someone in the United States or that also came across the border with 1 pound homemade explosives, strap them together and go do something devastating to this country. We've allowed that open border to stay open too long, and President Trump needs to shut that thing down on day. What reality is they should shut it down now. He'll never do that. They need to shut that border down. But I believe the drones are doing a specific purpose, and I believe they're U.S. drones. Now, what I think is ridiculous is for them to tell people, well, what you're seeing isn't a drone. An airplane can become a drone. So if you have a Cessna up there flying, it could absolutely be a Cessna, but it could also be a drone. Same as a helicopter. You can make drones out of helicopters. You can make them off the shelf. You can go buy them. But you can take a Cessna off a regular flight line and turn that into a drone with, you know, I don't know how much it would cost, but a very minimal investment.
Right.
So absolutely drones. Ukraine is using Cessnas, I think, right now, flying them into Russia, filling them up with bombs and blowing stuff up. A drone is simply an aircraft that doesn't have a human being in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're U.S. drones. I think they're doing something specific. And you notice we're not talking about them anymore.
Yeah, it suddenly went kind of quiet. It reminds me when you said a drone can be an airplane. I never forget, my dad and I used to go to various different airports, and he bought me a set of 10x50 decent binoculars and Jane's Observer's Book of Aircraft. And he would drive around and have me identify which aircraft we were looking at. And I'll never forget that we're driving not too far from NAS Glenview. And he goes, look, there's a flight out there to the right. And I go, and I picked up my binoculars, and I say, I think it's a DC. And as I just as I said that, I realized it was a flock of birds. And I said, I think it's a DC bird. And it became a family joke. Maybe it's a DC bird. Okay, where do we get your book? We're down to the last few seconds. Where do we get your book?
Hey, I appreciate that. You can get on Barnes & Noble. Easiest place is Amazon.com. Just Google up Gunfighter's Rule. Colonel William Dunn, it'll pop up. And I think you'll enjoy it. I've had a few people tell me that's the best book they've ever read. And what I want everyone to understand, I'm a Marine. Okay, so I'm a Marine. And I'm not a great writer, but I can tell a great story, I guess. So if you buy it, I really hope you enjoy it. And I think it'll be good for you.
I agree. All right, Colonel Dunn, thank you so much for your time and your expression of it.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me. And I'll make myself available anytime you want me back, sir.
I will take advantage of that. Thank you, sir. I want to encourage everyone to be vigorous, not violent, vigilant, not vituperative. vigilant, not vituperative. In liberty, I'm Charles Heller.
Lead us on to victory.
AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson.